Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad de Madrid. Pruebas de certificación. Comprensión de textos orales. Inglés. Certificado de nivel avanzado C1. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2020.
This test has 3 tasks. You will hear the first 2 tasks twice and task 3 only once. Task 1. You will hear part of a program. Choose the option A, B or C that best completes the sentences according to what you hear and write it in the corresponding white box. Sentence 0 is an example. Now read the sentences.
There is some rain threatened for later, but hopefully it will pass us by. And I'm walking with Phoebe Smith, who is a walker extraordinaire, which I think is fair enough to say, isn't it? You have done a lot and you kind of walk for a living. You are a bothy hunter, and we're going to walk to a bothy today. So just explain exactly where we are and where we're walking.
Okay, so we are near the village of Burness. And so there's a little bothy nestled a few kilometres up from there. Bothies are shelters that are left open for walkers and outdoor lovers to use for free. And they're a wonderful sort of institution, if you like, very, very British. There's over 100 shelters in the Mountain Bothies Association Network, which is a volunteer-run and donation-funded organisation. And they sort of save these buildings that otherwise would have been lost to the elements over the years and maintain them so that walkers can go and spend the night in them, one night, two nights in them, completely free, and sort of be immersed in these beautiful areas of the UK.
What's the original history of them? Were they built as shepherd's retreats?
It's a real mix between them. So I think the thing, because mountain huts or huts in wild places certainly isn't unique to Britain. You have huts in the Alps, you have backcountry shelters in the US. But the difference with the UK ones is that none of them were built for walkers. So you have a mixture of old homesteads that were for deer stalkers and their family because they lived in these massive estates and they had to look after the land and it wasn't practical for them to come in and out. You had ones that were for bunkhouses for quarry or mine workers who again were up deep in the mountains. You had them, some were schoolhouses, so it was a sort of a wild location, but it suited a lot of houses nearby who were also in the wild places, a place the children could go. So there's no minimum size or maximum size, just kind of the prerequisite is to be somewhere a little bit wild.
So Phoebe, tell me a bit about your background, where you come from, how you discovered this love of walking and wild sleeping.
It actually happened when I was in Australia, which sounds really strange. I grew up right near Snowdonia National Park in North Wales, so the mountains were right there, the wild areas were right there, but of course, as is often the way, you're always sort of taken for granted when they're near to you. Wasn't interested at all, and when I finished uni I went travelling and went to work and lived for a year in Australia, and a friend convinced me to go and sleep in a swag bag in the middle of the outback. So a swag bag's like a I only can describe it as like a body bag for your sleeping bag. And I remember before we went to sleep, the guide who was with us was telling us about all these things that could kill you potentially. Snakes, scorpions, spiders, even ants if they bit you enough times. And I remember sort of lying there and thinking, God, I've never done this at home, but I'm doing this here. Why am I doing this here? When at home, nothing can kill you. There's no risk from that. That was about 10 years ago now. So since then, I've been consistently seeking out. It started off as just walking, and then the walking became multi-day walking. And then rather than staying in campsites, I started to wild camp. And then the more you wild camp, which is sleeping out of a designated campsite just up in the mountains. And I found I was sleeping more and more in bothies. I'd seen one many years ago, not really knew what it was. And then someone told me more about them. I just absolutely love them. And so I've continuously tried to visit as many as I possibly can.
You obviously really connect in a way with them, that there's something even spiritual that happens when you're standing there.
I don't know what it is. I think in life we're so obsessed with booking things and controlling everything, and we can now, and we're always switched on with our phones, and we can always guarantee we can work something out. And I think just going into a wild place, you can't do that. You have to kind of let things happen a bit more, which is wonderfully freeing. And turning up to a bothy, you can't book a bothy. It's all completely, you turn up and there's always room for someone. So,
well, and you're not necessarily going to be on your own. I mean, in fact, you rarely would be.
No, exactly. So, I mean, I've been to some beautiful locations and been completely by myself, quite, you know, by chance, even on a Saturday night. And then I've been to ones and met some wonderful people from all over the world. The irony is that a lot of foreigners actually come travelling here and they've heard about bothies, whereas a lot of people who live in Britain don't actually know about them.
And everybody writes in the book. So the book in the bothy becomes a sort of social history of those who've passed through.
It does, yeah. And so one of my favourite things to do when I get to a bothy, once I've set myself up, is to find the book and have a read through and sort of get a sense of who stayed there before. And you can get a real mix of entries. You can get the ones from like D of E groups who've stopped in and it's been a miserable day and they're sort of complaining. And then you can get someone who's obviously got a lot on their mind and it's almost been a bit therapeutic to come out and stay in one.
Now, listen again.
There is some rain threatened for later, but hopefully it will pass us by. And I'm walking with Phoebe Smith, who is a walker extraordinaire, which I think is fair enough to say, isn't it? You have done a lot and you kind of walk for a living. You are a bothy hunter, and we're going to walk to a bothy today. So just explain exactly where we are and where we're walking.
Okay, so we are near the village of Burness. And so there's a little bothy nestled a few kilometres up from there. Bothies are shelters that are left open for walkers and outdoor lovers to use for free. And they're a wonderful sort of institution, if you like, very, very British. There's over 100 shelters in the Mountain Bothies Association Network, which is a volunteer-run and donation-funded organisation. And they sort of save these buildings that otherwise would have been lost to the elements over the years and maintain them so that walkers can go and spend the night in them, one night, two nights in them, completely free, and sort of be immersed in these beautiful areas of the UK.
What's the original history of them? Were they built as shepherd's retreats?
It's a real mix between them. So I think the thing, because mountain huts or huts in wild places certainly isn't unique to Britain. You have huts in the Alps, you have backcountry shelters in the US, but the difference with the UK ones is that none of them were built for walkers. So you have a mixture of old homesteads that were for deer stalkers and their family because they lived in these massive estates and they had to look after the land and it wasn't practical for them to come in and out. You had ones that were for bunkhouses for quarry or mine workers who again were up deep in the mountains. You had them, some were schoolhouses, so it was a sort of a wild location, but it suited a lot of houses nearby who were also in the wild places, a place the children could go. So there's no minimum size or maximum size, just kind of the prerequisite is to be somewhere a little bit wild.
So Phoebe, tell me a bit about your background, where you come from, how you discovered this love of walking and wild sleeping.
It actually happened when I was in Australia, which sounds really strange. I grew up right near Snowdonia National Park in North Wales, so the mountains were right there, the wild areas were right there, but of course, as is often the way, you're always sort of taken for granted when they're near to you. Wasn't interested at all, and when I finished uni, I went travelling and went to work and lived for a year in Australia, and a friend convinced me to go and sleep in a swag bag in the middle of the outback. So a swag bag's like a, you can describe it as like a body bag for your sleeping bag. And I remember before we went to sleep, the guide who was with us was telling us about all these things that could kill you potentially. Snakes, scorpions, spiders, even ants if they bit you enough times. And I remember sort of lying there and thinking, God, I've never done this at home, but I'm doing this here. Why am I doing this here? When at home, nothing can kill you. There's no risk from that. That was about 10 years ago now. So since then, I've been consistently seeking out. It started off as just walking, and then the walking became multi-day walking. And then rather than staying in campsites, I started to wild camp. And then the more you wild camp, which is sleeping out of a designated campsite, just up in the mountains. And I found I was sleeping more and more in bothies. I'd seen one many years ago, not really knew what it was. And then someone told me more about them. I just absolutely love them. And so I've continuously tried to visit as many as I possibly can.
You obviously really connect in a way with them, that there's something even spiritual that happens when
yeah.
you're standing there.
I don't know what it is. I think in life we're so obsessed with booking things and controlling everything, and we can now, and we're always switched on with our phones, and we can always guarantee we can work something out. And I think just going into a wild place, you can't do that. You have to kind of let things happen a bit more, which is wonderfully freeing. And turning up to a bothy, you can't book a bothy. It's all completely, you turn up and there's always room for someone. So,
well, and you're not necessarily going to be on your own. I mean, in fact, you rarely would be.
No, exactly. So, I mean, I've been in some beautiful locations and been completely by myself, quite, you know, by chance, even on a Saturday night. And then I've been to ones and met some wonderful people from all over the world. The irony is that a lot of foreigners actually come travelling here and they've heard about bothies, whereas a lot of people who live in Britain don't actually know about them.
And everybody writes in the book. So the book in the bothy becomes a sort of social history of those who've passed through.
It does, yeah. And so one of my favourite things to do when I get to a bothy, once I've set myself up, is to find the book and have a read through and sort of get a sense of who stayed there before. And you can get a real mix of entries. You can get the ones from like D of E groups who've stopped in and it's been a miserable day and they're sort of complaining. And then you can get someone who's obviously got a lot on their mind and it's almost been a bit therapeutic to come out and stay in one.
This is the end of task one.